Let me show you what Zelensky is doing, because more than just asking for President Trump for help, he's also trying to expand the war.
If Iran, from the first year of the war, gave new pace, new technology to Russia, it was Shahid drones. They gave thousands of these drones first year of the war. Then they gave licenses. What did they do? Did they attack us? I think yes. So they already did it. But we have to be honest. Iranians and North Koreans already attacked us.
And of course, the Ukrainians just attacked an Iranian ship. The Iranian foreign minister said that that will not go without warning. So it seems like he's trying to physically expand the scope of the war to, again, tie the United States in together with the Israeli war and also this war here. How do you see this? What do you see as an intent here?
Well, let's let's look at it from the standpoint of Netanyahu and Zelensky. This makes perfect sense. Netanyahu and Zelensky are both two peas in a pod. There's not very much difference between the two. And Zelensky is effectively saying something that my friend Marty Seif likes to remind people. You know, Raymond Aron, he's a famous French political scientist, used to say, large states do what they want, small states do what they must. Well, sometimes small states make large states do what they want. And right now, Israel has us under control and is committing us, our resources, our interests, our armed forces, everything against Iran. Now, Zelensky has stepped up and says, I too want to commit all the resources of the United States, its armed forces, and the interests of the American people to my war against Russia, which is effectively tied to my friend and comrade Netanyahu's war against Iran. So absolutely, he wants to expand the war. It's his last best chance in his overwrought mind, because Russia is crushing what is left of the Ukrainians on the battlefield. It's getting ready to crush what is left of the Ukrainian state on the west side of the Dnieper. We've already seen that in Odessa. Odessa is effectively shut down. And the foreign forces and officers that have been caught in this have been killed, even though nobody at NATO will admit it. It's a tragic situation. So the triumvirate right now, Zelensky, Netanyahu, Trump, is meeting with the goal of trying to figure out how they can rescue strategic defeat and turn it into a victory. And the only way they can possibly do that is for us to join them. The problem is that President Trump knows he doesn't have the means or the resources to do it. We've already exhausted ourselves. Our problems at home are far more serious, and our position financially and economically is not strong. All this nonsense about our fundamentals are great, we're productive, we're doing better than ever, we're better than ever, all of that is just bluster and nonsense. And he's going to keep it up until he can't. The question is, can he stand up to these two and say, no, I say he can't. He won't, because he's under duress, because the same cabal of billionaires, the same people backing the war against Iran, are backing the war with Russia. The hatred for Russia in the cabal against Iran is almost as bad as the hatred for Iran that Netanyahu has. It's almost as bad. We have no interest in any of this, Dan. We don't hate any of these people. There's no reason for us to. But this is where our government is. And it's very important for what you for you to mention what you did about the Congress. Who has stood up and registered any opposition to this insanity? What, Massey, Ro Khanna, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's now out, Massey, who soon will be? What does it tell you about Washington, D.C.?
Yep.
It is a planet unto itself. You know, the rest of the planet is orbiting Washington and being told what to do by Washington without regard to the interests of the people that live on the damn planet, us.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that obviously, as I pointed out a second ago, that's just what irks me a lot. And in this situation as well, because there are consequences to action. It's one thing if it just makes us mad and why are you prioritizing the interests of another country? But there's a message being sent to Moscow and to also. And by the way, I don't know if any of our audience has heard, they have a few nuclear weapons, the biggest stockpile on the planet, and we seem to be ignoring that. But President Putin is not ignoring what we're saying, and he made this comment here. He's been a couple of statements he's made here in the last couple of days that I think have gotten too little knowledge in the anywhere in the West, certainly not on mainstream media. But I wanted to get your view on a couple of things. First of all, we're going to look at what he says about the future of Ukraine based on all of these things, because according to him, it's not going to end up the way it is right now.
Among other things, there is the western part of Ukraine, a gift from Joseph Vissarionovich Stalin to Ukraine after the war. Stalin gave these lands to Ukraine, but he gave them as part of a single state. Apparently, it never occurred to him that a situation like today's could arise. By the way, I am sure that sooner or later Ukraine will lose these western lands and what belong to Poland, Hungary, and Romania sooner or later. Not tomorrow, perhaps not the day after, a year, 2, 10, or 15. But historically, everything will fall into place. There was only one guarantor of Ukraine's territorial integrity, and that was Russia. But they deemed it necessary, possible, and good for themselves to declare Russia their enemy, and to declare Russians in Ukraine a non-titular nation, which is complete nonsense and absolute rubbish.
I mean, that's kind of literally what you just said there about that we are making Russia an enemy that we don't need to make an enemy. But I want to circle back to the first of that, because two of the things she said there, I think, to Western ears are just like, well, that's obviously crazy. That's never going to happen, because he said that the lands in the Polish, which is in the yellow on the far left here, and Romania and Hungary, which is in the brown area there to the far left. The Romanian part, those two blue areas, are things that are historically Romanian, have a lot of ethnic Romanians in there. He's saying that eventually those, not just that the red area on the right, which is where ethnic Russians are going to, that's basically Nova Russia, are going to end up in Russian control. But he says those other ones may end up in Polish, Hungarian, and Romanian control. Is he just being crazy, or is there something to that? I can't hear you, Doug. Here we go. Got you now.
Yeah, okay. No, there's nothing crazy about it. He's invoking something that we in the United States categorically reject out of hand, historical truth. And if you go back through not just to the Second World War, but over the last 500 years, he's describing a reality. All of those borders have shifted back and forth and changed from time to time, leaving various groups of people on one side or another of the border. And what he's suggesting is that at the end of the Second World War, Stalin set up Europe for future wars. He took all of these lands away from the Germans, gave them to the Poles, and a little bit of it called East Prussia to Russia. And then the other areas that he pointed out there ended up inside this new construct called Ukraine. Now, that doesn't mean there were never any Ukrainians. There was always a region known as Ukraina, the Ukraine. They've always been a little different in terms of their language. And the further west you go, the more different they become genetically. But the point is, everything he said is accurate. And the only way to really settle this war in any way that makes sense is to bring in the countries that border Ukraine and Russia. In other words, you come to the table and you have the Russians at the table. And we could host this if we were even remotely objective, but we're not. But the Germans could probably do it if they got rid of Merz and put in a real German government. And then you have Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, especially Lithuania, that borders Ukraine, White Russia, Belarusia, Poland, Slovakia, Hungary, Romania. All of those states should sign up for whatever solution we create. And what he's suggesting is that these are historical areas that the people who live there would like to have back. You know, these areas were Hungarian for centuries. The other areas were part of Poland for centuries, a place called Galicia. And the people that lived on the edge of that were called Ruthenians. These are the Western Ukrainians. And then, of course, you have the Romanians. But the point is, he's right. Unfortunately, he's speaking to the wrong audience. The West, the people in France, people in Paris, London, Berlin, less so in Berlin, but certainly in Paris and London and Washington, they don't know anything about this. They didn't know anything about it at Versailles in 1919, which is one of the reasons that Versailles created these bastardized solutions a crazy solution such as Czechoslovakia. Two groups of people that hate each other and never wanted to live in the same country. But we made it happen. You know, we did that to Yugoslavia, forcing groups of people into one country and one state that never wanted to be there. These things were always going to break apart. They were going to fall apart when the external forces that created them were no longer present. We're finished in Iran. We should finish up and get out of Europe. These matters do not concern us. They are meaningless to us. And this little minority right now that is controlling American defense and foreign policy, as well as, I would argue, the financial future of our country, as well as the media and many other aspects of our society, including what our children study in school, all of these things need to end. We need to go back to being Americans. It's not just a question of America first. It is a question of our priorities. And our priorities are here at home. They always have been. And Americans, if you go back over the polling data for many, many years, have never wanted war with anybody. And that was true before World War I. It was true before World War II. It was true before and during the Korean War. And it was certainly true after Vietnam. And we have not learned the lesson. Instead, we found workarounds. We abandoned the gold standard so that we could print as much money as we'd like, and we could pay for whatever we wanted to do in a way that we thought could be concealed from the American people because there were no war taxes. In other words, there was no consequences, you point out, for our actions. And we also did it so that we could field what they call a volunteer force. And if you listen to what Smotrich said, and then you listen to what some of the political figures inside the United States routinely say about the Americans in uniform is, oh, well, they volunteered. It's their problem. You know, sorry, you volunteered. That's the way it is. In other words, whose skin is in the game? That's what Nassim Taleb always likes to ask. Whose skin is in the game? Your skin, my skin, but not their skin. And who is their skin? The people that are driving these wars in both Ukraine and Iran. These are the people controlling Donald Trump and our Congress.
Yeah, that was. I actually did a show on Sunday with Sid Rosenberg, conservative radio talk show host, was featured on Fox News on set. And he made that very argument. He said, yeah, I think President Trump needs to go in on the ground in Iran with boots on the ground. That's why these guys signed up. We don't have a draft. They signed up for this, et cetera. It just drove me crazy. Sorry, it's kind of an aside.
Well, we need to ask the question, who is Sid Rosenberg? Why does Sid Rosenberg take these positions? To whom is he connected? Sid Rosenberg is part of the larger cabal. You know, think of the cabal as an octopus with tentacles reaching out to many different people in all walks of American life, whether it's finance or Hollywood, media, any of these other things. And they're reporting back and responding to the same stimuli that Donald Trump is and Congress is. I don't know Sid Rosenberg. I wouldn't know him if I fell over the man. I'm sure he's a nice guy. But the question that has to be asked is, how did you arrive at this conclusion that the wealth and power and influence of the United States should be put at risk in a war with Iran and the Iranian nation? Who made that decision? How did we get here? Why are you supporting it? I think it could be ugly because I don't think the American people, if they were asked to vote on any of this, would support any of it.
I'm very confident of that. And unfortunately, this same power base that you're talking about here seems intent to try to draw us into a war with Russia, no matter what, whether we want to or not. And Russia can only be pushed so far. And I think that we're eventually going to get what we're looking for. In a speech this weekend, or maybe it was even, yeah, I think it was this weekend, yesterday, President Putin went on there. He actually addressed something you and I've talked about many times over the last year or so about why Russia hasn't gone farther and why they hadn't taken more risk militarily to bring this war to a conclusion. And he actually answered that question for the first time I've ever seen in some detail, where he said, I'm prioritized or have prioritized the stability of our country. We've withstood all these sanctions. We've withstood everything that all the NATO countries have done. And we have risen to the number four globally and the number one in Europe in purchasing power, PPP, et cetera. And he said, we're the top around that there. However, he said, it may be time to do something different and it may be time to take some risk, as he said here.
I will reveal a secret. My colleague will not be offended that during the award ceremony, one of the recipients whispered to me, we will win. We need to be bolder. I really want that. But a question arises, even bolder. And here, just as in the economy, there are risks. The press is losses on the battlefield on our side. Therefore, we will also act carefully here, but persistently and consistently achieving the goals set for the country, and we will achieve them.
Now, I think that he's coming to the conclusion, Doug, and I like your assessment of this, that there are also risks to not doing these things, to not being more bold, which is what apparently many of the military folks, even higher ups in the Kremlin, have been asking for. And then here we see this just in the news a couple of days ago, that there, and this is not just from the Ukraine side, this is Kiev Post, that Zelensky was talking about, but this is coming from the Russian media as well. And Putin was implying that they may be going to mobilize 500,000 additional as recently or as soon as September. So it seems that Russia may seriously be thinking about finally doing some of the things on the battlefield that you've been talking about. How do you see that?
President Putin understands something with great clarity that I don't think President Trump or any of his predecessors probably in the last 30 years have thoroughly grasped. His job is threefold. One, he's got to protect the United States. Number two, he's got to shelter the population. In other words, provide the kind of roofs over our heads that we deserve and need as people. And three, he's got to feed us. You know, you could broaden that to talk about ensure our prosperity, our standard of living. So shelter, protect, feed. That's what President Putin was talking about. And people have questioned repeatedly, why has he not moved more decisively? Well, when he started, I don't think he fully grasped the threat that was presented to him. I think he knew the West was going to press NATO, and he was trying to prepare for that. But I don't think he appreciated the true mendacity and hatred that people that were leading the West felt for Russia. And I'm not saying that that's the views of all Europeans, but I'm saying the people in charge, the globalists. You can call them whatever you want. They're various names. And he had to take stock of what he thought. About 2 months, 3 months in, he said, you know, I was wrong. I went in very light. I thought that we could minimize fighting. I didn't want to kill very many Ukrainians if I could avoid it. I regard them as Slavic Orthodox brothers. And I made a mistake. And finally, he sat with his leading general officers and they told him the truth. This won't work. You're going to have to back up, re-examine everything. We need a new plan to go forward. That new plan then becomes a strategic defense. We've talked about this before. The withdrawal over the Dnieper River from Kherson and the establishment of the strategic defense with a defense in depth and a line that then creates this ISR strike complex that becomes the meat grinder that ultimately kills a million plus Ukrainians. Now, he did that and he built up the force. And he also looked at the manufacturing base and he recognized that much of it had to be put back into action to build the material strength for the Russian armed forces. He did that. In other words, he reallocated resources, but he did it in a way that was designed to preserve the standard of living in Russia, to ensure that the Russian people were fed. In other words, that they retained an acceptable standard of living, that the Russian people were sheltered and protected. That's very important. And he has now reached a point where he realizes he possesses the power and the strength to implement a full-scale war against Ukraine. Because up until this point, a war with Ukraine has been a special military operation. I think that's another reason that Zelensky is in the meeting with Netanyahu and Trump, because just as Iran has turned out to be far stronger and more robust to recover much more quickly than everybody thought, the same is true for Russia. Russia is now a leading power in the world, as Putin pointed out in his speech. And this leading power is going to win. And he told the Russian people, we are now going to ramp up the war. We're going to attack. We're going to win. And I think you're going to see that. It's already begun in Odessa. I think you're going to see it in Kharkov. And I think it will then advance to the river and perhaps beyond, depending upon the circumstances. So that's the Putin answer. We've already talked about the Iranian answer. No talks. We've won. We're in charge. We will not be dislodged. And we will make it impossible for you Americans to return to the region. So the question is, what do we do? Are we going to be talked into joining the war on Ukraine's side? Not just shipping the missiles and equipment. Are we going to put together some ridiculous force of the willing that was discussed several years ago that has a snowball's chance in hell of winning against the Russian force that exists today? And I think what Putin is also saying is that if you choose to do this, we will be ready. And if you challenge us, we will oblige you with the war you say you want. God help you. So I hope that President Trump works his way through this. I hope someone tells him the truth about the real state of the war in both the Middle East as well as in Ukraine. But there's no certainty of that. And we still don't know precisely why President Trump is under duress and feels obligated to obey the dictates of these people backing not just Netanyahu, but also Zelensky.
And Doug, let's say that the trends that you identified in both of these two wars carries through, that Netanyahu talks Trump into doing, whether it's Pickaxe Island or any other target, or just going back into trying the impossible again. And that, I mean, even if we don't join on the ground with Ukraine, but we continue supporting such that eventually Russia moves forward, what is that going to do to the United States if we don't recognize these things now by choice, but that we get sucked into both these wars in a deeper place? Is it possible that we could be physically defeated, not just an embarrassment like in Afghanistan or Vietnam, but like actually lose a conflict somewhere?
Well, keep in mind that both the Biden and Trump administrations have been fighting the same conflicts. These conflicts are as follows: to back Israel and its supporters in a ruthless war of extermination against Israel's enemies in the Middle East. That's not just Iran. It's everyone and anyone that borders Israel or is close to Israel that threatens Israel. Then there's the war to exhaust Russian military and economic power in Ukraine. And finally, there is the unspoken but real war to curb the dramatic growth of China's strategic, economic, and international influence. But he's in a new position now. This is no longer, these are no longer wars that he exerts much control over. Trump's wars in Ukraine and the Middle East are now rear guard actions designed to preserve as much of American political, financial, military authority over the world as possible. And the reason is simple. America's financial, economic, and military means are nearly spent. And that's the tragedy of all of this, is that we have squandered enormous wealth, enormous power, enormous credibility and prestige on these losing propositions. The smart thing a long time ago would have been to cut bait, reduce your investment, and get out. You would think as a businessman, he would understand this, but he doesn't. And I don't think he will. And so I think things are going to get much worse. And yes, we are going to be embarrassed. And when we finally depart, the degree to which we have been defeated will be significant, and it will not be lost on the rest of the world that understands very clearly what I just said.
Yeah, and I think it will not be lost on the American people either, and then there will be bills to pay for all of these elite who have been supporting this we'll have to wait and see how that's going to come out. But history being a guide, it's not going to be pretty. It could have been avoided, but I think we're probably beyond that. In any case, we appreciate you coming on today and making this very clear to us. Also, a reminder to everybody, go to McGregorWarrior.substack.com. You can see all kinds of stuff like what you see on the screen right there. Why is America's Army Falling Apart? Lots of stuff, lots of good stuff on there. Doug McGregor's Warrior Substack. Thanks a lot for coming on, Doug. We always appreciate you.
Thank you, Dan.
See you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know, I don't try to talk you into buying gold or tell you how to run your stock portfolio, but there is a way you can help us. Subscribe, hit that like button, and share this with somebody you love.